Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors, and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
What's the 411? You're tuned in to 411 Teen, a weekly program for teens, families, educators, and other interested folks. 411 Teen provides a forum to examine and discuss various issues and events that confront, intersect, and sometimes interrupt our daily lives. This edition of 411 Teen welcomes the Politics Rap team from James S. Rickards High School International Baccalaureate Program students. They represent a diverse group of students and positions and political affiliations and perspectives, and I'm always very glad to have them. I'm Dr. Liz Hollyfield, and joining me via the Zoom platform, I welcome. I'll start with you, Amog, if you will introduce yourself.
Hey guys, I'm Amog Acharya. I'm a sophomore, and I'm a producer for the 411 Teens Club at Rickards High School.
So glad to have you. Xavier.
Hello, I am Xavier, and I'm also a sophomore. I just joined the club this year, but I'm loving it.
And Johnny?
Hello, my name is Anjani, and I'm also a sophomore at Rickards High School, and I also joined the club this year.
Okay. Nathan?
Hi, my name is Nathan. I'm also a sophomore, and I also joined this year, but it's been fun so far.
Great. We're always glad to have all of you. Nishi?
Hey, I'm Nishi. I'm a junior in the IB program at Rickards High School. I'm one of the student producers for 411 Teen.
Raymond?
Hello, my name is Raymond Isham. I'm a junior at James S. Rickards High School. This is my first time here. I'm glad to be here.
And Rithvika?
Hi, so my name is Rithvika. I'm a sophomore at Rickards, and I'm so excited to be here.
Well, I'm excited to have you all because all of you means that you will be coming back. You're either sophomore or junior. So I'm very glad to have you and welcome you to 411 Teen. House Bill 49 essentially removes the limits imposed on when 16 and 17-year-olds can work in Florida. Currently, they couldn't work any more than 8 hours on days before school. And they cannot work any more than 30 hours a week during the school year. All of that has been canceled with this bill. You can have special exemptions granted by a judge if you even want to work later. How do you feel about this controversial rollback of child labor protections? And Raymond, I'm going to start with you and put you in the hot seat because I know you said you had a part-time job, and I wanted to get your perspective on how you feel about this House bill and allowing students to work just about full-time hours and go to school.
So I definitely do think that this will help a lot of students out who may be, part of be providing for their family partial. But specifically for me, I just work, to work, get a little money on the side. And it definitely does help. Sometimes we'll be out late and, my boss will want me to stay, but, I can't, or a certain number of hours. That is just restrictions that that don't necessarily need to be there for all cases. So I think that allowing this to, I think with certain restrictions, going to see the judge or stuff like that, it definitely helps, but the restrictions are not necessary in most cases.
Okay. All right. Well, I'd like to hear from all of you. I started with Raymond only because I knew he had a part-time job, but feel free. Xavier, where do you sit on this? And my concern, and I think a lot of concerns of the adults and those who are educators, is just how much working is too much working? I mean, how are you going to be able to balance school and work? So that's something I'd also like to hear you talk about. How do we balance protecting the well-being and education that everybody needs, hopefully to be able to get even a better job?
Yeah, this concerns me, though I don't think it's bad. Like, as it is, because the thing I see with this is that as long as the bill just remains something that's going to be, oh, these people have to, like, or they have the opportunity to do this, that's good. But I think that it's very, there's very much an issue of it could possibly become something where now people kind of have to work if their family can't support it. And now they have to fill in this full role. And as you said, that means that these people are now going to have less time for school and for other activities because they're so consumed by trying to fill the role of a working person.
Okay. Amag, where do you sit? What's happening?
I mean, I see school as sort of like a job itself. So having work on top of that, it's extremely difficult for students to balance that with their extracurriculars, as well as having to do homework outside of school. So I think students who work, I find a sort of like a respect for them because they have to balance these things as well as providing for their families.
Well, I guess it would really encourage their time management, which is something that you all focus on. So if you are working and a student, you will have to very efficiently manage your time. Would you agree? What do you think about that? And Johnny?
I agree 100% because for a lot of people, managing time is really, really hard. And I kind of feel like getting a job would help them.
Okay.
But like with that also, I kind of feel like for someone that's in school, they shouldn't be getting a job with a lot of academic stress. So, yeah.
Other comments? Nathan, Nishi, haven't heard from you all.
Well, like everyone already mentioned, I think as students, there's already so many responsibilities that so many people have to have in general with school and our extracurriculars. And honestly, like especially being in the IB program, our workload is higher than the average student.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like it's just a lot. But I do understand that some people do have those circumstances where it's necessary for them. So to be honest, as someone who's never actually worked a job, I can't exactly explain that perspective. But I don't think all students should have to work either.
Okay. Other comments?
Well, in my opinion, I think that in the end, it was the student's choice to take on that job. If they wanted to put that burden on them, they wanted to. It's their responsibility to work, take the hours, and deal with it, you know? Mm-hmm. But yeah.
Okay, that's great. Did I get everyone? Did I hear from everyone? Did I leave anyone out?
If I could step in again.
I just wanted
to say that I think that at the end of the day, no one's disagreeing with the idea of like having the ability to work more. But I think that it's one of those things where as soon as there's the opportunity there, you have the possibility that it becomes kind of a social norm where everyone does this. And that is the point where it becomes a problem and is something that is we've seen before, like with these kind of things becoming social norms, and we want to avoid.
One thing I want to say is this is a national push for child labor changes. It's not just something that we're seeing here in Florida, so I don't want to give you that impression. However, you know, there appears to be sort of a new economy, I would call it an exploitation. For example, in Homestead, migrant children, mainly from Central America, are coming to the U.S. without their parents, and they're coming in record numbers. They're driven. The reason they're coming is economic desperation. It's made worse, of course, by the pandemic. So what we're finding here and in other states is the use of illegal child labor. And it includes, there have been a number of articles about it, 12-year-olds that are roofers, working as roofers in Florida, and slaughterhouse workers in Mississippi and Delaware and North Carolina. Let's look at this aspect of it. Do you think, has this system meant to protect children now? If we start looking at these aspects of it, what do you think about it? Because that's what's happening. You know, I mean, that is the real issue. For example, let me just give you another example as I'm thinking about it. Valerie Lindsay, she is a language arts teacher in Homestead, Florida. And she was saying that almost every student in her program, and we're talking about around 100, carry a workload of an adult. So now, what's your comments? How do you feel about this? How do we address this? I mean, in the past 2 years, 250,000 children have entered the U.S. unaccompanied. How do we address it? Even though, you know, and immigration continues to be a major problem. We'll have to talk about that another time. But I just want to look at this economy, this putting kids to work.
Well, I don't think that is an issue on how many, I don't think that's an issue that stems from how many hours children can work. I think that's an issue that comes with, of course, the immigration issue. And also just like adults taking advantage of children. I don't think that would change. I don't think they're going to be working any less hours, especially since it's in most cases, you know, illegal. Anyways, you know, they're working so many hours. I don't think, you know, decreasing the hours of work for children is going to change the issue. I think we need to look more into like finding where these, you know, immigrants are working, these places or these immigrant children, and, you know, snipping that at the bud, making sure that those children are safe in all aspects, not just working.
Okay, those are some very valid points, because what's happening is, you know, here we have these kids, and they are kids that are working, and they're doing it to maintain their families, to maintain their existence in a new world. Any other comments?
I think this once again just re-shows the thing I was mentioning before with the fact that as like if we had bills that were working to help kids that were on their own or who had families that couldn't support themselves, I know we have some of those, but just worked on that more, then I think that would solve the same issue that this is attempting to solve.
Okay.
Only that this has the downside of possibly leading to more issues down the road with child labor.
Okay. Well, I'm going to ask, we'll get back to this. I'm going to ask you all to hold your thoughts for a minute, but think about it, because it is a big issue. We're going to take a brief break and we'll come back, because I'd like to hear your ideas on how we address this whole movement, how we deter this. Just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen. I'm Dr. Liz Hollyfield, and this is the Politics Wrap edition. And Politics Wrap consists of IB students, International Baccalaureate students from Rickards High School. We have been talking about child labor laws, and let's get back to it. Do you feel the system is working as it should? I mean, how do we address this? How do we deter child labor abuse? I mean, we've got kids that are working on roofs, and those are very dangerous jobs. We've got kids who are working in slaughterhouses. So what do we do? What about the companies that hire these migrant children? I just throw it out there to you all to see what you think.
Yeah.
I mean, they get violations. Let me throw this in there. They have been violated. But we're talking about major multi-million dollar companies getting $15,000 violations fine. And you know that's not going to have any impact, okay? So comments.
Yeah, I don't want to talk too much on this issue, but I definitely do think Xavier was right when he said this is more of an issue with you know, providing help to these kids and these families in other ways other than extending work hours. We need to be able to provide aid to these immigrants and to these students who are working these hours, because there's no reason why they should have to, right? So the government should be providing support for these families rather than allowing them to work more when they shouldn't be working at all. They should be focused on education and, you know, all of those things. So, yeah.
Well, you raise a good issue, even though you didn't want to talk too much about it. You do raise a good issue because there's another question there. Should we provide aid and assistance to these immigrants? You know, immigration is a big problem here. They're coming in and, you know, do we have the responsibility to provide? Nishi, go right ahead.
Oh, yeah. I definitely think that as a government, we have that responsibility to help people in general. It doesn't necessarily matter if there are citizens or not. They're still humans. And I think that in an ethical and moral sense, we should be helping them because they're coming to this country coming to a completely new country with, like, most don't even have much of a foundation to go off of, barely any money and a place to stay. And I think that it is our responsibility to help in some way or the other. Obviously, we can't provide them with everything just because that's a limitation on our own resources. But it is our responsibility as humans, not just as a government, to help other people. So,
okay. Other comments?
I think there are two sides to this because it's a very complicated issue.
Mm-hmm.
On one hand, you have the immigrants and their children. They're coming into the U.S. and they're working, and we have to care for them and ensure that they're safe. But the other thing is we need to implement the correct services in order to actually do that. And the thing is, we can't, it's basically impossible to fully do that without the proper funding. And we need to ensure safe environments for the children that are working. And there's a phrase, bite only what you can chew. And this can be applied here because we need enough space to, hold on.
Well, I hear what you're saying, or I hear some of what you're saying, because you mentioned the funding. And I think that as I read about and hear people comment on, here, listen to the talking heads, one of the big issues is really funding. New York is running out of money. They're putting them up in hotels, but they only have so much money. So what do we do? How do we address that? I mean, from you all's perspective, where you sit, and you, as you look at what's going on and look at our responsibilities as humans, what should we do? What suggestions do you think we should handle this? How should we handle this?
Wait, I'm sorry. This isn't really like from the funding aspect, but I think we should forget all of this, you know, and just the government should just put more pressure, more stress on, what was I going to say? I forgot. I'm sorry.
That's all right. That's all right. Hey, that's all right. It'll come back to you. And when it comes back, then you can share it. Go right ahead.
Yeah. I think this is a very complicated issue. Something that's, I think, a little scary to say. But, you know, there are too many people coming into America. We don't have the funding. We don't have the space. So I think as a government, as Nishi said, as humans, we have the moral obligation to help these people out, right? They're coming from violence, starvation and things like that. So we do have a moral obligation to help. I do think that we need to, instead of allowing people to come here and then, you know, having to solve that issue from here, I think we need to give our resources elsewhere and fix those areas over there or where these people are coming from, so then they don't have to come here. So then it doesn't become an issue where we're trying to find these places. We're just fixing the areas that have these issues already, and then they can live in their homeland and things like that.
Mm-hmm. That sounds good. Other comments? I'd like to hear from somebody else.
I completely agree with Nishi and Raymond because I'm an immigrant myself, so, like, it makes sense. And, like, a lot of people that immigrate to America, like, they have, like, they're immigrating to this country because they think they have a lot of opportunities and they have like a lot of opportunities to get better. But I completely agree with what Raymond said. Like, instead of like always letting people come into America, like, it's better if we send them resources there. So like, we're making their place a better place, and we're even giving them the convenience of staying in their homeland and just making things easier for them.
Okay. Someone else had a comment.
Okay, I remembered what I was going to say.
Good.
So I was going to say that the government should just help, okay, so they shouldn't, you know, amend child labor laws. You know, like 16 and 17 year olds that need to work, they should be able to work. They should be allowed.
Okay.
But there should be rules restricting them from what they're allowed to do.
Uh-huh.
If a company is exploiting them, they should also be educated, you know?
Right.
That's one of the ideas. They should be educated, and also the government should just help the actual like children stay away from those companies that exploit them.
Okay. All right. You all are coming up with some good ideas. Maybe you all need to be in the government. Yeah. Any other comments?
Just to kind of build off of what Rasika said there, I think that if we have these systems in place where we can say, I agree that controlling what people, jobs people can work in, right?
Yeah.
Not having any of the really heavy labor jobs where people get hurt, things like that, that, you know, are more like that we see the issues with child labor existing. Like, not having those be an option, instead having it be things that are better jobs that they can work from there into something else. Having jobs where they can progress this so that they don't get stuck into this, you know, just mm-hmm. working to survive as a kid, and instead they can work to actually make their life be able to improve.
Exactly. Like internships and like externships, like things like that, that would actually help them instead of just, you know, straight up being exploited.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, then the other side, I got to play, you know, they get here, they have nothing, they are desperate, they have so long, I mean, for example, in New York, I know, you know, they may have housing for so long, their families may be able to stay for so long, and then they have to leave. What can we do? And these kids need to be, they really do need to be in school. Because school and education and being able to communicate is a key here in America. Now, I know there's an underground, you know, labor force and all of that, but if they want to be, it just seems like it's such a vicious cycle. And I don't know that we will, you know, be able to solve it. But as you talk, I think of conditions and things that we have to take into consideration. Because they're desperate and employers take advantage of that. They know, okay, we'll give you this, we'll give you X amount of money, and then they send a lot of money back home. I mean, it just seems like a vicious cycle. Maybe it's just me. Maybe we can make a big difference. I don't know. It doesn't seem like it. It seems like it's getting worse and worse. We had 250,000 children unaccompanied minors come into this country. That was last year. That's a lot.
It's definitely a horrible issue. I think again, it's very hard, very, very hard to support these people from here, especially coming, you know, unaccounted for. They don't have any documents or any papers like
right.
that. So
right.
it's definitely hard to do that. I think the biggest thing moving forward is we need to start splitting our efforts towards, you know, of course, helping the people here, but also being able to help, you know, fix those areas that they're coming from. Because, you know, it's gonna keep cycling back. You know, there's always gonna be people who come to America, so yeah. Definitely need to start making, you know, other areas a land of opportunity, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I know it's a big issue, and I know the whole immigration is going to be a hot topic with the presidential campaign, but we got to do something. You know, it can't continue. We can't sustain all of this. I don't know. Any other comments before we can go on to something else? We were going to talk about standardized testing a little bit, so we can talk about that. Got a couple other things. So, okay, I'll move on. As we talk about these students coming and young folks coming to the United States, before becoming citizens of the United States, applicants are required to pass a civics test assessing their knowledge of American history and the law. There's going to be a movement. Now they're thinking about, there's a growing movement to make high school students pass a version of the citizenship test before they can graduate. There's at least 14 states already that require it. And another six or seven are considering bills to do so. My question to you all is, should students have to pass a civics test to graduate? Okay. One of the concerns has been in recent decades, the focus in school has shifted away from teaching civics. And then other folks are saying civics education should not be about memorizing facts. So what do you all think? Where do you sit? Do we need to require a citizenship test? Because it's definitely, you may not have heard much about it, but it's definitely in the making.
I mean, honestly, I think it should be required before the end of high school. Okay. Because high school students are our future voters. They need to know how the system works and the history leading up to our current point in time. So I think like a common problem that I see is a lot of voters, they do not look at the full scope of American history. They only look at a certain part and cherry pick certain parts to look at, but they don't look at the whole American history as a whole. So I think it's pretty important that going forward into the future, voters should know how the American system works mm-hmm. and what values we must uphold in the future.
Okay. That's solid thinking. Other comments? Let me hear from all of you. What do you think? Do you need that test? Is that important to you? Does it make a difference?
I kind of agree with what Amag was saying, that they're going to be future voters. You should probably know how the system works. I don't know if this is a universal experience, but when I took civics, it was in seventh grade, and I don't exactly remember stuff from back then. I can't even remember anything from before summer break sometimes.
Okay.
So I feel like there should at least be the like citizenship test and a different civics course kind of closer to when you take that and become an actual voter.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Nishi, where do you sit on this? I haven't heard your comment. What do you think?
Yeah, so honestly, I think like in a general sense, I think we've all seen those like YouTube videos that shows like is an American like smarter than like a fifth grader or something like that. Mm-hmm. And it'll be like basic geography questions or stuff about our government, and a lot of people struggle to answer them. I think in a good way, it's great to focus on the civics, especially because it's such a core part of our country and we should be knowledgeable of how our country works. But I don't think that like mandating a test is mm-hmm. the best way to go. Again, standardized testing, in my opinion, isn't exactly effective. And to be honest, adds unnecessary pressure on people that we really don't need. I do think emphasizing civics more in our curriculum in general around in the nation is a great idea. I just don't like the idea of testing personally.
Okay. All right.
I completely
agree.
You can go.
All
right. I completely agree. I think that the standardized testing method is a very ineffective way of teaching people. If what we want is for more educated voters, then having standardized testing is not the way to do it, I don't think. I think the way to do it is to have a class that is required that talks about just basic core curriculum, but doesn't make people stress about some test at the end, or even have to worry about it as like a graduating requirement that could stop people from continuing their life.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Someone else had a comment. You can share it.
Oh, I was just going to say, I completely agree with Amag and Nathan, because not only is it useful because all of us are going to be future voters, it can improve your critical thinking skills. Like, you can learn about like different issues, different policies, different laws, debates, I don't know, like information related to politics and like governance. And like all of these skills, you need it, right? Mm-hmm. These are essential. And also, like, civics is almost nothing compared to like 12th grade level courses that we already take. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm just assuming, but like, just take it, you know?
Do you feel?
I think it's really important.
And do you feel that the civics education that is taught is adequate?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
Well,
it's not a setup. I just wonder, you know, how you all felt. Do you think that you're getting adequate education as far as civics is concerned?
I'll interject, I guess. So I took.
Wait, before you get started, we've only got 10 seconds, so I'm going to go on and take a break and come right back, and then you can talk. You're tuned into 411 Teen. We're going to take a brief break, but we'll get right back at you.
Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors, and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
What's the 411? You're tuned into 411 Teen, and we are talking about standardized testing, and I had to interrupt you, so continue your thought.
Yeah, so I was just saying that I did take a one semester civics test this year, or civics course this year. I'm on the side, and I definitely do think it was kind of concerning. It was a lot of history. I'll say a lot of past things, and I think those are definitely important topics that we need to cover. But it wasn't a lot of information that would help the current voter in today's society. So I think I don't think it needs to be implemented in school necessarily, but as far as voting goes. There are the education, the people who are voting are not educated, I think. And I think that we need to, as it pertains to voting, you don't necessarily have to graduate or have to take it to graduate. But in order to vote, there needs to be some type of test. Just as there's a vote to become a citizen, a test to become a citizen, so these people are educated and they're not just, voting whoever looks the best or,
right.
agrees with. What their dad said, you know? So yeah, I definitely think there needs to be a test before people are allowed to vote.
Well, as we talk about standardized testing, let me get this in before some of you leave. I want to know how you feel about colleges and requiring the SAT. Because for decades, for a long time, taking the SAT or the ACT had been a rite of passage for American high school students. You had to take one or two of those standardized tests, and they were required as a part of the whole admissions process. And some schools got rid of them. But let me tell you where things stand now. Yale, Dartmouth, MIT, Georgetown, Purdue, just to name a few, have reinitiated the SAT or the ACT as a test requirement. They're stating that standardized tests do predict academic performance better than high school grades. What do you all think? What's your position on this? Now
I
we're switching
that,
back.
Okay, oh, I'm
sorry. Oh, no, go right ahead. Go ahead.
Wait, were you going to go, Nishi? I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'll go after you. No problem.
Okay. I think that the SAT should not be required at all because some people are just bad at taking tests. like they just cannot take tests to save their lives. Mm-hmm. And you know, it just does not determine the future, their future.
Okay. All right. You know, and there are some complaints about it. I mean, one of the things was that the ACT and the SAT had built-in biases that favored white affluent students. And so that they started eliminating it, you know. And others are saying, you know, standardized test scores help colleges make better decisions. Now colleges are coming back and saying, oops, well, maybe they do. Comments.
Okay, so I think as a junior who's taking the SAT next weekend.
Oh, okay.
I hate it personally. I just think it's a terrible way to determine someone's intelligence, just because there's so many people who have issues with taking tests in such a pressurizing environment, and basing someone's level of intelligence on a singular test is an insane concept to me. And personally, I think that because of the holistic process we have, I just feel like it's not necessary to mandate having a test score on our application when there's so many other things you could be looking at. For example, our GPA, which is throughout the course of our high school career. And I feel like that's a much better representation of how a student does in school. And the SAT is a 2-hour and 15-minute test now, because it's online now, that is adaptable and varies between people and is not really the most fair, in my opinion. And I just don't like it at all. I just felt like sharing that. It's
okay,
so bad.
You're entitled. I mean, and because you are definitely, you know, on the hot seat, so to speak, because it's applying to you. I mean, colleges have switched back and forth. And Nishi, what are you finding? Are you finding that the universities or the colleges that you're interested in are requiring SAT or ACT? I mean, have you noticed that at this point? Where do they sit?
Yeah, most of them that I'm interested in are mandating it. And even if they're not mandating it, for the most part, it would be really beneficial if I had a good SAT score on my application if mm-hmm. I wanted to get into the school. Mm-hmm. So even at that point, when the school goes test optional, I think when you still have that factor that can improve your application so much just with that one score, I feel like it's a waste not to take it at this point. I just hate that it's even a thing in the first place.
Well, you know, some colleges are also saying more information is always better. You know, it's better to get more information than to have less.
And that, yeah, it's just like, I think it's an outdated practice a little bit. And I do think there's better methods of, you know, testing a student's intelligence and their skill set. And I think it's not suitable for everyone. And a lot of people in general do struggle with that test. And mm-hmm. yeah, I understand the concept and I understand the intention. I'm just not a fan of it.
Okay. Someone else. Here, Xavier, what do you think? I mean, you're not there yet but you will be. It's in the future, the very near future. What do you think about it? How do you feel about that?
Oh, yeah. So I would say, actually, I am somewhat for the SAT. I don't think that the SAT does it quite right. I think that a lot of our standardized testing today, whether it's AP or the SAT or such mm-hmm. things, are often built to make people get questions wrong. And that takes away the focus from what they should truly be. I mean, I was looking at like different tests and looking at the questions, and it felt like every single question had some kind of trick in it, which I think isn't good. But mm-hmm. I think that we do need to have some kind of testing for people, just due to the fact that high schools differ so much that maybe I've gone to a high school where I did all of the best courses there and was looked top of my class, but the high school actually didn't really have like good policy about things, and so people just kind of got a free pass in the class or things like that, whereas someone else got, you know, tough grades and it really looks like they were kind of middle of the pack at their school, but their school was so academically like up there that actually that person is more skilled than the other person. And we need some kind of way of finding that out. And I think that's what the SAT does. So while I don't agree with the SAT itself, I think that we need something like it to exist.
Okay. Other comments?
I think another thing about the SAT is that the score varies between it varies on how well you study or prepare for it. And the thing about that is students from higher income families are able to, they have access to the resources such as tutors or online courses to more, to get more prepared to take the test compared to students who don't have access to those sources. And I think it sort of splits these two groups, and it gives like a higher, what's the word? It gives them like a better chance of doing better because of their situation. Yeah.
I just going off of that, because Amo made a really good point. It's especially like now I'm noticing there are so many people, like all of us have such different lives, and even just like, and going back to the point where like there's so many students who have jobs and stuff, there are so many of us don't even have the time to actually sit down and study that much for the SAT. And there's some people that do have a lot of time. And I just don't think it's very fair considering everyone has those different circumstances. And also at the same time, yeah, like Amok said, there's so many tutoring services out there, and it's all very, very expensive. So not everyone can afford those kind of resources. And when they do, they're able to score higher because of it. And it's not exactly fair because they're given that advantage due to their background, which is something that I feel affects college admissions a lot already. And I don't, it already affects college admissions a lot. So.
But what about those schools that are in higher socioeconomic, I'm talking about the high schools now, that are in higher socioeconomic areas where the taxes and the schools are much better equipped. And so consequently, you know, this, the education that the students are feeling, are getting is really enhanced. It's better. How do we address that? Because that's an inequity. That's not fair. I mean, we have some students who go to schools who are very well equipped and can prepare their students, and some students who go to schools that are on the edge, schools that are very vulnerable. They don't have the money. They don't have the equipment. I mean, how do we, do you have any suggestions as to how we even this up, how we make it a level playing field?
Well, actually, like in college admissions, because I think most colleges do recognize that difference between like regions and like the different resources that students have access to. So for the most part, when college admissions officers look at your application, they're looking at people within your region, like within your school. They're comparing you with students that are just like yourself in that region. But within your region, obviously students have access to different things. So clearly, like, it's not exactly that possible to make it as, like, make it very equitable just because everyone's living such different lives. Mm-hmm. But I think in a regional sense, for example, like you said, the Texas schools, there will be an admissions officers only really comparing students within those region and taking the context of their situation into account when they're looking at the applications. So, for example, Rickards offers a lot of AP courses, a lot of higher level courses. And so colleges will be looking at how many opportunities we got to be able to take these courses. Well, in other schools that may not offer as many AP courses, they won't hold it against them because they know that they don't have the opportunity to take as many like us. So I think in some ways they are trying to make it more equitable already.
So when it comes around to it, and I'd like to hear from all of you, do you think we should have this? I mean, some are saying, yeah, SATs are beneficial. I mean, standardized tests are beneficial. Should we have these standardized testing or should we not? Or should we just, you know, maybe the ultimate goal of admission criteria should be to ensure that students land or are placed in the best environment, the best milieu, where they have a chance to succeed. You know, standardized test scores can, they say, can help that goal, can help you to go, oh, this person might do better in this particular type of environment. I don't know, but, you know, it's an ongoing debate. And again, I just wonder where you as students, what do you think we should do?
Go ahead. Oh, well, so I think Xavier hit it straight on the dot.
Okay.
There's definitely certain, you know, circumstances that can affect a person's SAT score or SAT score. And, you know, they also seem to, you know, be working against the student, but he hit it on the dot. There's definitely, you know, you said it earlier, more information means better, or more data means better data, or right, or better, right? So the more information they have, the better educated decision they can make whether you get into the college or not, right? So, you know, taking the SAT, taking the ACT gives them more information, gives them a better rounded, you know, of who you are and your abilities to perform in their college, right? And so I think it's definitely maybe not required. I like the idea of optional. So, you know, as me, as I'm looking for colleges and things, I'm definitely seeing these optionals and I'm like, this is beneficial for me to take. And, you know, me, I don't necessarily have all these extra resources to, you know, take all these tests and stuff for the time, right? So yeah, that's a disadvantage, but I don't really see that as an issue because I have my grades, I have my extracurriculars, my college essay, and, you know, the AP, AP and IB program to help. So it definitely should be at least optional.
But I also hear you saying, you know, that you have a composite of a number of things, a number of variables that need to be considered for admission. And tell me if I'm hearing the wrong thing, that all of those variables need to be considered, not just the test score. Like you said, you're an AP and you're in the IB program and you have all of these things. So it seems like it should be a composite of that. Other comments? Well, we only got 2 minutes. So other comments, what are you thinking? What do you think? Anjani. Yeah. Is Anjani still there?
Oh, sorry.
That's okay. No problem.
But I think Xavier had something to say.
Oh, okay. So. Go right ahead, Xavier. Yeah.
I just wanted to work on what Raymond said as well and just say that I do think that the SAT is a badly done system. I think that it's much like I think the AP systems also has a lot of these flaws where we can see that there's a lot of these issues with people having questions that aren't about the actual subject and are more about, you know, understanding language arts or understanding, you know, how to answer a test. And I think solving those issues solves the issues that a lot of people have with having tests. It may be stressful for one person to for one person to test versus another person. But at the end of the day, if the test is like just a raw form of the information that person should know, then they're not really going to notice that because it's going to be, oh, I know this stuff. I've learned this all year and now I can put it to the test, or for the SAT, things like that. You know, this is stuff I've learned throughout my life. Now I apply it instead of being, oh, I know how to take this test.
Yeah, and that's a good point, because when I was in school, they taught us how to take a test. Not so much SAT, but they taught us how to. There's a whole skill to taking test, and we were taught how to take the test, how to eliminate. There's always, if you have a good test and it's made correctly, there should be one answer that is blatantly wrong, okay? And so you should be able to eliminate that. And then, you know, there's a whole process, a little recipe of how you work and how you approach that test. So that's something else. I mean, and all schools don't do that. That's another variable. Is your school in touch with what's happening? Other comments, somebody else? We got a minute. Somebody else had a comment?
If I could say more.
Yes, sure.
I would say that one of the big things I would say also is that I went to a different school as my sibling. So for me, seeing the different view of their school that they went to had very few AP options, very few of these options. And then my school being lucky enough that Rickards has all of these options for these things, I feel like seeing that has really made me understand that when the colleges look at your application, they look at where you came from, what options you had at your school. And I think that was the big thing I noticed, is that just it isn't all bad. The schools do pay attention to these things and they do say, okay, you had this course available, you didn't. you were in this poorer community, you weren't, you know. And I think that that's a big part of how they decide things, which is good.
Well, do you have any comments? If not, we've got to go anyway. I'm looking at the clock. We're out of it, so it's time out for this edition of 411 Team. Many thanks to my 411 Team Politics Rep panelists and student producers, and to my listening audience, much appreciation for your ear and your time. This is Dr. Liz Hollyfield inviting you to tune in next week, same time, same place, to get the 411 on 411 Team. The 411 Team was produced by Dr. Liz Hollyfield. Technical assistance was provided by Evan Lawson. If you would like to participate in the 411 Team or have suggestions for discussion topics, call 850-645-7200. You can listen to previous episodes of 411 Team at wfsu.org.